You said 1 hour?
Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on this beautiful, nice, crispy Thursday night in September.
Fall day, Don. Yeah.
It's fall. Yeah, it's fall. I don't even want to say it. I want to say summer, but we didn't even have much of a summer here. I'm Don Allen, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how's it going on this beautiful fall day?
Love it, Don. The weather is beautiful. Actually, we've had pretty, you know, beautiful, excellent, but awful dry weather for about the last month and a half. In fact, September here in Minnesota was so dry, I think they had like 1/10 of an inch of a drop of rain. I mean, we had one specific day earlier in September where it rained real hard in early in the morning. But
I remember that, yes.
Yeah, cumulatively, it doesn't make any difference. But, yeah, just watching everything going around, if you will. We've got international terrorism. We've got a lot of federal...
Yep.
Our activity here in Minneapolis, a lot of federal agencies have been quietly coming into town over the last 4 or 5 days. A lot of surveillance going on. I just hope that the Somali community is cognizant of how they are being profiled and how they're, you know, being spoken of and spoken about within the corridors of security, intelligence gathering, and et cetera. So, you know, maybe phone lines are open. In fact, give that number. Maybe folks may want to call us and let us, you know, ask us what it's like up here in Minnesota with
exactly.
All these potential terrorists is the news media. And I mean, they've been rolling in. Martin Savage and others have been here. And at one point, they thought Piers Morgan was going to come in, and they still may. Anderson Cooper and them wanting to do, I understand, a kind of town hall, if you will, particularly with the Somalis, and security experts to talk in terms of how the problem of the recruitment by Al-Shabaab is going, if you will. Of course, the word Al-Shabaab meaning the young ones. People tend not to know and understand that. But this is a hotbed of activity, if you will. A lot of feelers going out, a lot of FBI special task forces fully engaged here. So it's kind of interesting what's going on right now. Spotlight is on Minneapolis as an outgrowth of the carnage and tragedy at the Westgate shopping mall in Nairobi, Africa. I tell you, man, it's dangerous out here. By the way, they had a shooting at a mall here in the United States. Allegedly, it was a workplace incident. Two were identified as having been shot and killed. And man, the security that they brought in on that mall, just kind of unbelievable. So everybody's, you know, very sensitive, gun-shy, and et cetera. So we've got a lot of things going, Don. Get that number out, man, so the lines are open there.
The lines are open. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, I want to ask you about something before we move on here.
Sure, Don.
What's the deal with Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas on the floor for almost 22 hours talking about against Obamacare? I mean, what was that about?
Well, he was doing what the old Southerners used to call his filibustering, old Teddy Cruz, out of representing Texas, but you know he's actually a Canadian. He has a double nationality, but you know he's born in Canada. He's Canadian.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, Ted Cruz, you didn't know that? Yeah, Cruz is a Canadian. He's filibustering. He's, you know, all into Ted Cruz. A lot of his Republican colleagues and particularly Republican leaders are very, very unhappy with him. But he's the kind of senator that doesn't care what kind of damage he does as long as he doesn't do it to Senator Ted Cruz. And so he stood on the floor for 21 hours, a little over 21 hours, and filibustered in order to stop a series of procedural motions and et cetera that were supposed to be forthcoming. I mean, he didn't stop it because he really didn't have the support of the majority of the Republicans in the Senate. But he's getting the publicity. I guess he's preparing himself to run in 2016, though there is a quiet question about his constitutional eligibility because of his place of birth, even though he says he has dual citizenship. Constitution does not allow that to be quote-unquote addressed, and if it had been, Arnold Schwarzenegger 20 years ago would have ran for president. People tend to forget that. Yeah, the courts have ruled on that dual citizenship. It is the place of your birth. End of discussion. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to your question, I hope that answered your question about Ted Cruz.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. And we also like to let people know, if you weren't informed or weren't in front of a TV, like I was not today, the U.S. Postal Service to raise price of stamps 3 cents to 49 cents. So
I don't know why they just don't go ahead and raise it to 50 cents and just – you just go into the bank with two quarters and just, you know, get you a single stamp, or you just go in and round it off and get $25 worth of 50-cent stamps instead of the – I guess that's to remember the days of the penny stamp. You know, for the youngsters out there, it used to be a time we mailed a letter here in the United States for a penny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Ms. Harris, that would make a lot of sense, because if you just went – if they went from where they are now to 50 cents, you're talking, you know, millions of dollars for each state. Are the United Postal Service in revenue, you know? And so, I mean, I don't understand why they don't do that either. That's crazy.
But
they're ready to jump into Syria in a heartbeat. Again, the phone lines are open. Our number is 347-426-3904, discussing can I call it the Somalian problem or Somali problem tonight?
Well, the Somalian problem, I mean, it's not anything that we're making here. We're not indicating there's any problems with our brothers from the Horn of Africa. But I got to tell you, I hope they've been paying attention to the way the media has been handling the revelations. And you see, this was first brought forward. And I noticed today they were trying to do a little bit of a cutting job on the Kenyan foreign minister. Miss Mohammed, very smooth, very, very smooth, very well-educated African woman from Kenya. But, you know, when she said that there were two or three Americans and that they were from Minnesota, as well as a female, a white female from the U.K., if you ask the United Kingdom, I've seen the federal authorities, particularly here, spend all day trying to say that there's no confirmation. And, of course, the embarrassment is that the latest word on social media is that at least 3 to 4 young men left here in July for Mogadishu to be involved with and after having been recruited by Al-Shabaab. A lot of tension at some of the schools with heavy Somali student population, security being tightened up. Again, I don't know if the Somali community has been paying any attention, a lot of surveillance, and, of course, the NSA. I mean, let's just be real. You know, the NSA is up. Yeah, and, in fact, just like that static we got just now, Don, they have upped and increased the electronic surveillance, if you will. And so, you know, even them so-called cell phones that you think are throwaways, you know, are being severely monitored. And I got to tell you, international or intercontinental discussions and telephone calls that are going on from numbers that have been identified as being under the custody and control of Somalis. I mean, it is considered to be a Somali problem, and there's, you know, a lot of discussion and actions going on. By the way, malls here in the Twin Cities, particularly the world's largest MOA, really tightening up out there. Tightening up. Of course, they're saying the right things. You know, they're even telling their Somali security guards, you know, we believe in you, we trust you, everything's okay. Yeah,
you'll be fine.
And they watching them on camera, and got what you got now is watchers.
Yes.
So anyway, we're going only for an hour tonight, Don. So
we
want to move into anything else. That phone line is open on the Somali issues what it's done here in the Twin Cities. Major headlines in this morning's edition of the major Caucasian newspaper indicating Al-Shabaab. You know, they are a frightening group. They have been organized for quite some time. And people really didn't want to fess up to. In fact, there's a situation I will not name for security reasons. I will not name the Caucasian female police officer who has just returned from Nairobi after a year's assignment on behalf of the United Nations security detail. But she had to come back home because she couldn't even go jogging. That's what she told some friends here just about 4 or 5 days ago. Been back. She's been back about 2 weeks. But she had presented herself as an expert on Somali security measures, and there are clearly some that are tuned in and listening to us know who I'm talking about. But she had to get the heck out of there. They had to bring her back out of Nairobi for security reasons and safety. So it's heavy right now, man. It's real heavy.
Wow, that's interesting. I'm looking at this the report. Well, Mr. Edwards, you know, not to skip around, but remember we had last week sent a data practice privacy request to the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority regarding the agencies that were begging them for $2.5 million to train special interest groups.
Yeah.
And lo and
behold,
which,
by the way, is going to be a lot of Somalis were going to be trained.
Yes, 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 exactly.
Yeah,
and
don't you remember that? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And here's a response I got from their public relations person, Jen Hathaway. It says, below, please find the legislation that outlines when proposals are public information. So what she's saying is that the information I asked for is not public information because it's a proposal. So she also says, we believe that we'll have a contract signed by Friday, in which case we can release the contract and proposal. Now, I don't know what contract she's talking about that's going to be signed, that she thinks it's going to be signed on Friday, and I don't understand. Then she sent me stadium legislation 15.31D through 16.5, and it's just blah, blah, blah. Then she got her attorney, Hugh Brown, from Dorsey Whitney, who asked her, you asked whether the language cited in your email below derived from Minnesota statute, well, the Privacy Act, applies a situation where one proposal is submitted to a government entity. For those reasons which follow, it appears to me that the language does apply, and the proposal may not be released until a contract is finalized. So they're saying that they, even though it should be public information, they're considering it, what would they call it, guarded information until a contract is finalized, which means that you have these agencies that are sitting up there getting ready, you know, going, you know, we need $2.5 million, and that's the dramatic irony in the whole thing, Mr. Edwards. $2.5 million when they're about to spend over $1 billion. And these brothers are going to walk away and be happy and satisfied, you know, with $2.5 million.
No, they're not going to get 2.5. Now, we talked about that, Don, about four weeks ago. In fact, we broke the story here to the extent that that had been reduced to $750,000 to be split among 15 organizations. So it's not going to be no $2.5 million. I'm a little puzzled by the legal opinion by Dorsey Whitney about the confidentiality, though there is a provision in the legislation which indicates that there are confidentiality clauses, and I think I told you on the program 2 weeks ago that that's one of the reasons that the Sports Facility Authority almost got it. By talking, is that you, Don? We muted or unmuted? Hello? Hello?
Hello? Yeah, I'm here. I hear you.
Yeah, but no, we had an intercept there that was talking about muted. Maybe it was NSA personnel.
Oh,
gentlemen, got to use a little bit better equipment. I've always said the best equipment is Czechoslovakian, okay?
Oh,
they got some of the best equipment in the world. Yeah, you didn't hear that? Muted?
No,
you
didn't.
I picked it up on my receiver and brought in some new equipment, But anyways, continuing on with the revelations about the $2.5 million, which is now down to $750. A freelance reporter by the name of Mel Reeves, who works for a organization called, I don't know, Minnesota Real or something like that, had wrote a column in the Spokesman Recorder about a month ago, crying about the fact that Michelle Kelm Hagelin, the chairwoman of the powerful Minnesota Sports Facility Authority, in a meeting, there was a lot of heavy hitters there. Alfred Babington Johnson, who just returned from activities and et cetera, and a large group who just returned from Washington. But they were told that they would not be getting the 2.5. They'd be getting 750 at best, and they could split it amongst 15 organizations. Now, there have been ongoing discussions, some on the public record, in meetings of the Sports Facility Authority, Don, and many of the principals who were involved with these organizations have been in the meetings and have given public testimony and et cetera. So I'm not sure what the confidentiality feature is. But the public information officer must have forgotten 2 months ago, as they were getting into the due diligence on the Wilf family, the owners of the Vikings, that there was a meeting that Friday morning, and a number of people who had been involved in these discussions and meetings over at OIC and other places about, you know, preparing themselves to receive the $2.5 million had been told in a meeting by Michelle Kelm Haglund that she couldn't quite understand why it was that they needed money to continue to train when they've all been training some as long as 10 or 11 years, and where were the people they had been training? They didn't do a good job of answering that. Yeah.
Oops.
But maybe we'll get a call from some people who are out there that maybe, you know about it. But the opinion by the attorney, was it Mr. Brown of Dorsey & Whitney? Very powerful, powerful law firm here in the Twin Cities. They get all the sweet action, if you will. I'm puzzled by his statement about the confidentiality nature, because the board, if they vote and sign the agreement this coming Friday in 2 days, I mean, they're going to have it on the agenda, and they're, you know, going to have copies available. See, my question is, Don, maybe you can answer this. And, you know, we really should have given Alex Tittle a call. If we had Alex's number, you know, you may want to think about giving Alex a call, because Alex could help us. Alex Tittle, for our listening audience, is the equity director for the Sports Facility Authority, because he was very much involved. In fact, he was at a meeting of the so-called minority contractors just at the beginning of the month. They always meet the first Thursday of the month, and he was on the agenda, and they kind of talked about, you know, training money and stuff like that. And so I'm puzzled about the confidentiality. I know it kind of sounds redundant, but I'm kind of puzzled by the confidentiality aspect, if you will, when these folks have all been in public meetings and have indicated that they are negotiating or were negotiating for the $2.5 million. They never did. Now, to their credit, they never did state how much money they was asking for until the freelance reporter Mel Reeves wrote it in the Spokesman Recorder. And then people found out that it was $2.5 million. In fact, now I'll say this to you. It was a combination of many different groups, Latino, Hispanic, Native Americans. My beloved brothers over at the Native American OIC were very much involved. The Merriam Community Center over in St. Paul was one of those that was involved, if you will. There were some additional Latino, if you will, and so I'm just not quite sure, because they met all summer putting together the manifesto, if you will, which later became the proposal. So I'm just not sure, Don, but you're saying now that, and boy, we'd sure like to get a call from Alex. Alex, if you're listening,
I just sent a message, Mr. Eric, via Facebook, right. But, you know, this is going to blow you away what I just got in.
Okay.
You're talking about the training and, you know, Summit Academy, OIC, and this is from an individual who actually went to Summit Academy, and I'm going to read this unedited, okay? I'm just going to read exactly what he sent me. He said, Brother Don and Ron, you know I have a lot to say about Summit Academy and my experience there and after. I brought into the whole Summit Academy is going to change my life, provide me with the opportunity to earn a living wage, but with about 20 T's. That was before I learned that the pre-apprentice's carpenter position at Summit said I was being trained for didn't exist, at least not according to the carpenter union or any certified carpenter. He says, my uncle is a master carpenter, and he asked me what I was taught, what I was trained to do. After telling him, he said that I was basically trained to be a general laborer and paid college tuition money to get taught how to do what it takes with no formal education to learn how to do, okay? He goes, next paragraph. I got to the point where I stopped putting Summit Academy on my resume because the potential employees would see it and have this half smirk and half hidden laugh, and the joke was on me. After successfully completing and graduating from Summit, I was sent to work at the African American Museum for Roxanne Givens. When myself and fellow Summit graduates working on the museum complained about earning minimum wage, the foreman supervising this project said we were hired out by Summit like a temp service, that he would get undocumented workers off Craigslist before paying us anything above minimum wage. He also informed us that there was no such thing as a pre-apprentice carpenter. And this brother's ready to go public, Mr. Edwards, at any time.
Well, let me just say this. I think I know who this gentleman is, and for this reason. Randy First of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, their ace reporter, a year ago, a little over a year ago, because it's been that long since the museum was supposed to open up, he went over there one day, and I think this young man that just texted you this message was one of those that were working. In fact, they actually weren't working for Roxanne Givens, per se. They were working for the construction company that was supposed to be doing the work. And I'm pretty sure this is the gentleman. There's a picture of him standing behind Roxanne as she pontificated about the wonderful things that were going to happen with the $3 million that had been poured into the so-called African-American Museum, which has never opened. And I think that this young man was, in fact, interviewed very briefly and is quoted in this Minneapolis Star Tribune article talking in terms of his expectations as he was working on what was to be a historical project, if you will. I think that this is the young man that I saw in that article. He clearly knows what he's talking about.
Now, Mr. Edwards, you just said something that sparked some interest. I'm not trying to run all over the place, but you just said $3 million poured into the museum. Now, I took your advice, and on Tuesday, well, no, today's Tuesday. Tuesday of last week, actually, because today's Wednesday. Tuesday of last week, I was driving in South Minneapolis, and I pulled over, walked up to the window, looked in, and it looks like a dust bowl, like it could be the horror haunted house for Halloween. There's not a damn thing in there.
And yeah, that's what I've been told by other folks that have gone through there or went by there.
And so there's $3 million, and this is what I understand. I have people on Facebook battling me saying, oh, that's not right, you're lying. You know, there's no way that someone could get that kind of money and not open a museum.
Oh, well, no, let me just cut in on that, Mr.
I appreciate
Allen.
That. Please, Mr.
Phone lines are open. I mean, we talked about this when it first happened 2 years ago. There was a story written again by Randy First of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, in which he talked in terms of the litigation that had been initiated against Roxanne, who I've known all of her life. I mean, there's nothing personal or begrudging or et cetera. But there was a whole litany of things and a lot of, you know, dots going to lines. And the article, well, the situation was called to the attention of the Star Tribune by one of our banks, if you will, who was in a dispute over $1 million in loans that had been given to Ms. Givens about 2009. And then there was a situation in which where Commissioner Peter McLaughlin of the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners and others had been involved upon a request from Ms. Givens, and they had stood as the fiduciary agent for a large grant of a little over $1 million that came from the state of Minnesota. And then there was an additional million that was raised through other fundraisers and grants. Oh, in fact, our congressman, our beloved congressman, Keith Ellison, signed off on a $150,000 grant. Now, if we find the exact dates, anyone is welcome to go back on demand and call up that program that we did 2 years ago, where we talked infinitum and by detail what was in the Minneapolis Star and Tribune story. So I'm saddened to hear, Don, that folks would challenge you on that when everybody in the world And I'll tell you, one of the problems that they've got is that, you know, Dorothy Bridges came back to town. Oops. And, you know, Dorothy Bridges, who is now a senior vice president of the Federal Reserve here in the Federal District of Minnesota, the Dakotas, and et cetera, really got burnt, if you will, was treated very poorly by people who, you know, many thought were of the same ilk, if you will, and persuasion. And Ms. Bridges, in fact, left her position at Franklin National Bank, if you will, to, quote-unquote, come back and to get away from the damage that was momentarily done to her reputation. In fact, she was brought back to Washington to be a vice president of the Farmland Bank. You know, we got so many banks that we just don't know anything about it. But anyways, she... when Dorothy Bridges came back here in July of 2012, see, a lot of folks didn't know that Ms. Bridges was back, and she has made it extremely tough for a lot of folk to continue whatever kind of fundraising that they, quote-unquote, think that they're going to be able to do in the name of the black community, and that money goes in a different direction. I mean, like, you know, to Las Vegas and the crap tables and things like that. So I'm saying that folks would challenge you like that. Maybe one of those people that you say has challenged you could feel free to call and give me that number again.
Yeah, that number is 347-426-3904. That's 347-426-3904. And if you want, you know, you guys could Google this story by Mr. Edwards. It says, despite WCTO report, the rhetoric on Black Museum's money problems makes it clear that Franklin Bank is not the villain here. So that was done. That was published by you. 9/12/12. It has all the I just pulled it up because Mr. Edwards. I republished it on the Independent Business News Network. And I said, I know I saw it somewhere. And I just pulled it up, and there it is. It has this story. You know, I don't know why these people are challenging me, but the story has been read 679 times on my site alone.
Oh,
so I mean, the information is out there from your story, and I mean, you go into explicit details about the negotiation.
Yeah.
1.2. Oh man.
And my publishers indicate that the story has been read over 4,000 times. Again, that date for those, it was 9/12/12 was I wrote that story, raising the question on where was our museum, what was happening, and I'm so saddened that folks, you know, feel the need to do it that way as opposed to talk about, I don't know, accountability and whatever. But, yes, the Franklin National Bank was actually the first holder. See, that's where the dispute broke out because Franklin Bank was not informed that another loan had been taken out, a grant had been taken out, nor was the state of Minnesota fully cognizant, and by extension, as fiduciary agent, Hennepin County was not fully cognizant, and things began to blow up, and people got upset with each other. And let me see, if I wrote that on 9/12/12, Mr. Randy First wrote his article back on late April of 2012. Mm-hmm. That's when that story broke.
And you remember, Mr. Edwards, how that Edward Moody from WCCO tried to come out with a story to kind of prop them up, talking about the Black History Museum faces major setbacks, like it was a problem of Franklin National Bank, and, you know, bullcrap. Yeah,
I didn't know where Mr. Moody had come from. I didn't realize that he had been a little reporter anchor up in Duluth.
Yeah.
And he showed up down here in early 2012, and you're right, one of the first assignments he was given was to run out there and do that story, and that just didn't sit well with a lot of us, as you know, who are longtime journalists here in throughout the entire state. But yeah, there's the date. You know, go back, link it up, call it up. You know.
Yeah.
What else we got, Don? Man, so much going on in my town. Press conference tomorrow for those that have been following the T.T. Franklin situation, and again, Mr. Allen will throw that phone number out there. Mm-hmm. Press conference tomorrow. There was a story front page, the Metro section, Minneapolis Star Tribune this morning, in which the Franklin family indicated there's possibility of existence of some videos which may contain the voice of Mr. Franklin pleading for his life before his head was blown apart. By the way, the you know, the autopsy, I've heard people talk about it. Oh, I know my leaders were out in Washington and such, hobnobbing. But Mr. Franklin was, he was shot 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he was not shot 5 times in the back of the head. The shots to his head were all along the side of his face. In fact, they even shot him, looks like they had held the muzzle right up to his ear, shot him right straight through the ear. Shot him in the neck, blew all of the side of his face, his eye, nose, and stuff. I mean, it's horrible. But an all-white grand jury here in Hennepin County said, no, Bill, the police officers did the right thing. In fact, in the article in this morning's edition, again, you can link on Minneapolis Star Tribune. In that article, the Chief Janae Harto said, you must believe in the grand jury process, and we stand behind it. I mean, of course, I guess you do. I mean, And as County Attorney Michael Freeman, our longtime county attorney here, who will never indict a white police officer for killing an African-American civilian, he just said, well, y'all had your shot, and there will never be any criminal prosecution.
No, never.
But I think tomorrow. Yes, sir.
No, go ahead. No, I was just saying there would never be.
No, I think that
right.
Tomorrow in downtown Minneapolis, Michael Patton, the attorney of record, will announce a civil lawsuit. I do believe that's the purpose of positioning that press that he got in this morning's paper with the family. I think he's going to formally file or announce the filing of the lawsuit tomorrow.
And I don't know
what the amount is.
Yeah, they
go ahead, Mr. Al.
Well, they ought to break the city, stop them from doing that light rail trolley crap downtown. But anyway, I just got another text from I know this person, Mr. Edwards. You know her too. She was standing with me at the Urban League when we were at that meeting together.
Certainly, I know just who you're talking about, and she was probably one of the people referred to in the article in the Spokesman Recorder, in which people were saying that people were bad-mouthing some of the initial leaders. Is that where we're kind of going with this one?
Well, some of the initial
leaders of the so-called Franklin Committee for Justice? Is that what this is about?
And she has sent me a message via from the father and mother of Terrence Franklin. And it says that, let me just pull it up here again. It says that they're asking organizer Mel Reeves and other organizers of any vigils or anything concerning Terrence Franklin to not use Terrence Franklin's name from this point on, period.
Oh, my. Is that right?
Yep, that
and
is
And I know
correct.
The lady that you're talking about, oh, my.
Yeah.
Because
and,
I understood that there was a altercation in the last organizational meeting that they had. Microphones were grabbed, allegations were made relevant to Asian provocateurs, Quislings, and such things as that. Oh, my. That's terrible.
And I'm looking at the events, Mr. Edwards, and they're supposed to join us on Friday at 6:30 for a 12th of Nicollet Mall on PV Plaza, downtown Minneapolis, for a Terrence Franklin vigil. And the family, she must be listening to the show. Thank you. She says the family is disgusted at the actions taken by the sellouts that were organizing. It's coming in slow. Okay, that was organizing the vigil, and it lost respect and focus, and it was all about them getting in the newspaper in front of a camera. It had nothing to do with justice for our son, period.
My. So. What a sad commentary surrounding a very, very tragic event. In this city, in which clearly a young man's civil rights were seriously violated and his life taken, that people would, be involved in that kind of exploitation. You know what I'm saying? Man, no wonder there was the article by one of the quote-unquote organizers indicating that people were cowards for not standing up. I'm not quite understanding, because I well remember the first person that stood up to really bring attention to this was the young lady who, if I'm not mistaken, has a child by Mr. Franklin. She was there, a very lonely figure on the steps of City Hall, right around, I think it was that Wednesday, so that would have been 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, up the 15th of May.
Yeah.
In fact, for those that want to deal with that, you can find a link to a couple of the television stations, WCCO, taking a look at my operational materials here, computers, etc. Mm-hmm. WCCO, KSTP, and Channel 9 did brief interviews with the young lady who was supported at that time only by about 7 people. Yeah. And then the organizers moved in, and next thing you know, they were making all kinds of statements which were inconsistent with the facts. In fact, I'm really disappointed that in that they're using the name of Mr. Franklin, that the organizers that are certainly being addressed in these text messages being sent to you did not make an immediate statement and declaration about the decision of the grand jury, because it's been over a week now. And there was ample opportunity with all the knowledge that they said they had to have dissected point by point by point and challenge County Attorney Mike Freeman and the Minneapolis Police Department and all others. And yet, you know, there's not been a single utterance. And I assume some of that will come tomorrow. Some of it apparently came yesterday at some type of press conference, the article in this morning's edition of the Star Tribune. But I was waiting for the organizers. You remember the organizers, don't you, Don?
They were at the Trayvon
Martin rally and et cetera, and screaming and hollering.
You know, that was so embarrassing. One of the young ladies that were organizing the Trayvon Martin rally is leaving for Rome and will not be back in Minneapolis till May. So,
oh, next year, you mean?
May of next year, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's really interesting.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say.
Phone number. Just give the phone number again for those that maybe want to call as opposed to text. Phone lines are open to give us your observation on the Terrence Franklin killing. I call it a murder, pure and simple. Yeah.
That's 347-426-3904. 3904. 347, area code, 426-3904. And we're broadcasting live from the Apple Studio. So give us a call. We can talk about it and figure out what's going on. But what I was going to say, Mr. Evers, is that, you know, I wrote a piece and just a note and put it up on Facebook. And I had people just in outrage. And they attacked me rather than attacking the issue. You know, I just wrote, you know, for all you idiots who are scratching your tiny balls regarding the Hennepin County government not coming up with any charges against the police for the murder of any black person in Minnesota, you guys got to understand that they're weak. And I'm paraphrasing now, but basically what I said is that these people, the white people who control police, courts, jails, jobs, education, know how weak the African-American infrastructure here and leadership infrastructure here is in Minnesota. And so they can do this. They can continue to do this because just like M-Sure, you know, Mr. Evers, there's a big controversy about M-Sure not giving any black African-American agencies money to distribute the Obamacare.
Right.
Well, you know, last Friday, Governor Dayton's office, there was a big meeting with all these African-American agencies, including Insurune, Alfred Babberton Johnson, Bill English, and a few other nameable people, public people. And it's a little private DFL pity party, and, you know, he assured them that, you know, we're going to take care of this. But what they did is they sectioned off $700,000 for these agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And they could
$750,000, I understand. $750,000, yeah. That's what I understood, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, they have this meeting, and it's exclusive, and there's a lot of, you know, internal stuff going on, but they know what to do. They can, we'll throw some money at you, Negroes. We'll give you pennies, because we spent millions on the Paul Bunyan ad campaign. But we're going to give you some pennies, and you'll shut up. You'll get enough money to keep your lights on for a year and go buy a Porsche or Mercedes or a Jaguar. And then next year we'll start all over again. But y'all just...
Yeah, well, right. Yeah, we talked about this, what was it, 3 weeks ago on these programs when the M-Sure controversy broke. And by the way, let me continue to say very pointedly and without equivocation, if it had not been for Senator Jeff Hayden, nothing would have happened. Because he was courageous enough, because you have to be courageous when you're over there and you're one of only two African-Americans in the Senate. Now, we only have one black African-American in the House of Representatives, so we got a total of three. But if it had not been for Senator Hayden calling the executive staff of the M-Sure to task and making them sound like the babbling idiots, racists that they are, explaining why they had not given one single penny on the first round of funding to any African-American group, Babington and others wouldn't have had a chance to have that kind of meeting with the governor and indicate that the collection plate was already out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, come on now. And by the way, I'm made aware that last Tuesday, because we had a discussion, I thought that Senator Hayden had already left for Washington, and I found out that he did not make that trip at all, but that Tuesday evening, he hosted a meeting on the south side of Minneapolis, and they tell me the group of people that showed up out there screaming and howling were the very people who did not support him one iota when he began to raise questions about that and other issues during the last legislative session. Man, they tell me folks, the father of a local judge and other folks. In fact, they tell me that my good friend, Commissioner Tony Carter, came way over from Ramsey County to be in the meeting.
Wow.
You know, saying that they expected to have a piece of the action in the sector, yet when Senator Hayden indicated to his colleagues 2 days before that memorable meeting the week before that he intended to confront his own party, they all like, shh, man, you sure you want to do that? You sure you want to do that, bro?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, sir. So kudos to Senator Jeff Hayden for being a man of principle. Let's give him a roll, drum roll there, Don. You got the cartridge up. Just give him a little drum roll there.
Here, how's this?
All right, then. That's the way to do it. What else we got, man? Capone Lines is open now. We wait to hear because we got big money. We got at least $750,000 that's going to be awarded on Friday, according to the chairwoman of the powerful Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority, to 15 groups that are going to train African Americans. I mean, whatever that means. Native Americans, Hispanics, Asians, you know, whoever, you know. What does 750 come out to amongst 15 groups? It would get about what, 20,000? You got 20,000 apiece?
Let me find the calculator here.
Is that calculator, man?
Yeah, go ahead. You know, math, you know, me and math ain't good. 750,000 divided by 15, they buy 50,000 each.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's Rolls Royce. Well, not Rolls Royce. I'm sorry. I apologize to the British automobile maker. That's BMW money.
Yeah. You know. But see, now here goes the challenge. They give this. Let me go back and find that, Mr. Edwards, because this is important here. You remember the cement lady? At that they gave the $500,000 contract to. Well, she awarded the $500,000.
You mean the lady lived down in New Ulm?
Yeah. Now,
are you sure that we're talking about the woman that lived down in New Ulm?
The one
that she gonna pour concrete, right?
Yeah, she gonna pour. She ain't pouring a damn drop of concrete. But the thing is, now she was able to navigate $500,000 for pouring concrete or consulting on concrete or something. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now you take $750,000, okay, and you divide that by 15 organizations. That's about $50,000 an organization. Now, what in the hell are these groups going to do? Who is going to get hired? And $50,000 in an organization that has over five people is nothing. That's not even a year's salary for each of them. You know, that's like,
well, absolutely.
It's like program money, you know, for some kind of nonprofit. And so they are treating it like a nonprofit. So that's just shameful that these guys would, you know, go for that bucket, that just drop in the bucket type thing, and not go for the real gusto.
I know, but like I said, I wish that Alex Tittle or somebody would have, you know, made sure that we received that information, because we were also inviting them to have an opportunity to be on the program, OIC, whoever. But Mr. Tittle, I mean, I have to stay on Mr. Tittle because he is the equity director. Oh, by the way, let me make a prediction for you, Don, and for our listening audience. You heard it here from the guru, from Black Rasputin. I'm predicting that Velma Corvell will not be reappointed as civil rights director for the city of Minneapolis come December 31st of this year. Okay?
That'd be- That'd be a beautiful thing, yes.
Yeah. No, I'm predicting it, that she will not be reappointed as director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, that her term will officially end on the 31st day of December in the year of our Lord, 2013. Now, I'm making that prediction. Anybody got any questions? Phone line is open. Want to question us on that kind of observation, prediction, if you will, and et cetera. That's how bad things have gotten down there. And as R.T. Ryback, our beloved mayor, departs, if you will, he is not saving anybody. Everybody going under the bus. Okay?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's not doing anything now. I mean, yeah. There was some. Well, Mr. Edwards, let me run this by you, too. We had talked about this in a production meeting last week and then this week, but now the city of Minneapolis, under Velma Corbell and contract compliance, says this. They're putting new lighting in the convention center, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they have to buy the supplies, which is lights, rent scaffolding, and you know, it's a construction project.
Uh-huh.
But you know that they're not putting it under construction, so therefore they do not have to have
bids.
Any bids or minority goals.
Right,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
So I know a couple of gentlemen went down there and talked with Elizabeth Glidden last week and last Friday, talked with Velma Corbell, who says, I quote, "That's the way it is, and I have no intention of changing it."
That yeah, I heard that kind of information. Kind of came my way, let's say, from the top of the city council. And I think that's one of the reasons why I don't want to tell all their business, but that's one of the reasons when yesterday the executive committee of the city government, which is the mayor, council president, two other council members, and the city coordinator, sent out the list of notification of non-reappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that may have been a mistake by Miss Corvell, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, she's got a military pension and she's got a state pension because you know she was over there in the state for a long time, and her and Wanda Kirkpatrick and them all worked together and came up there, and then she's got a city pension, so she's vested. So she's in pretty doggone good shape, I assume.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is.
Yeah.
She is in
yeah.
very
yeah.
good shape. So I mean, there's. She doesn't have any problem, walking out of there, but we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. But I have to believe your prediction, Mr. Edwards, because as we get down to October, the last quarter of the year, and as you reflect back on the year, you were right about the Timberwolves not winning 50 games and going to the playoffs, putting all the white boys on the floor.
That's right.
The numerous amounts of cases where police have beat or injured individuals this year. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you called it, from Ira Stafford all the way to DeMario Booker to even Terrence Franklin. And now, you know, the coroner comes out and the grand jury comes out with no indictment. I mean, you called that when it first happened. I was listening to the very first show where we were talking about Terrence Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
And you had said, you know what, the police who shot him, they might have a grand jury investigation or inquiry, and they're not gonna find any reason to convict or charge these police officers.
No
or kill
probable
cause.
No probable.
No probable cause. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you
yeah.
said that clear as day, and it's true. It's, they didn't. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We used to call it in the old days, us old brothers. We used to call it business as usual. Okay. That's really what it is. That's what's being conveyed to us. By the way, we touched on the situation. We watched very closely and hope for the best for our beloved Somali brothers and sisters because, as I said earlier, at the top of the program, Mr. Allen, a lot of federal agents streaming into the Twin Cities, if you will, Rochester, and where there's a fairly, you know, decent-sized Somali population there. A lot of wiretaps, a lot of new wiretaps. NSA is fully engaged. Boy, they love doing this. That NSA, I tell you. I think that's why the person must have come on and said, you know, mute, just to let us know that Big Brother can put his hand on our shoulders anytime they get ready. But anyways, my Somali brothers and sisters out there, you know, this is a time to be vigilant, my brothers and sisters, because these folks are, they're nervous. They're real nervous. There's been too many meetings going on in this city at certain locales and et cetera. You know, you can't call every meeting a prayer meeting, you know what I'm saying? But anyways, you know, be aware and be vigil, my brother. Say, man, because our beloved Vikings is over in London, man, we sure wishing the best. But, you know, Don Allen, I told you, I said, this team could very well start 0-6. Now, they 0-3, brother. They got Pittsburgh coming up, then they got a bye, then they got Carolina. And then they get into the heart of the NFC North. I just don't know what they're going to do. Now, the word is that Christian Ponder, who always finds a way to bail out when it gets too hot, just like he did last year going into the playoffs in Green Bay, Christian Ponder may not play Sunday. Said his ribbies are hurt. He hurt his ribbies, hurt his ribs. And I said, well, when did he hurt him? Because he started and completed the entire game, so when did his ribs get hurt? You still there, Mr. Allen? Looks like we may have lost Mr. Allen.
Here I am. I am back.
Oh, you're back? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I was just.
I didn't want to think that Big Brother came in and grabbed you, man. You know, over there at the studio, you kind of disappeared. But yeah, Christian Ponders looked like he's not going to be playing Sunday.
Yeah, we had and I heard that on the radio today because you know I don't follow sports at all, really. And
that's right. You are not a sports fan.
No. I got too much going on, and if I want to know something about sports, I can ask you. But the reason why I was gone for a minute, someone alerted me to this. This story published at the Star Tribune September 25th at 6:29 p.m. Minority leaders call for Minneapolis Teachers Union to reopen contract talks to the public. A coalition of African-American community leaders denounced the recent request by a union representing Minneapolis teachers to send contract talks into mediation, which effectively closes negotiations to the public.
Let me back up. Now, this was Minneapolis Teachers Federation or the St. Paul Teachers Federation?
Minneapolis teachers to send contract talks into mediation. Minneapolis.
Well, St. Paul just got through doing the same thing 3 days ago. What's going on?
Yep.
Who are the leaders? Does this come out tomorrow morning, or was this a story that came out? Yeah,
I think
it's the 26th. It comes out tomorrow morning, right?
Yeah, it will come out tomorrow morning. And it's Chris Stewart from the African American Leadership Forum and former school board member says this is insufferable, intolerable, and will not go unnoticed.
Well, has he called for the same kind of action up there in St. Cloud where he lives?
I know.
Oh,
we got to ask him. We have to ask him.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't supposed to say that. So they've called for the negotiations to be reopened to do what?
They want it open to the public to have public input. So Don Samuels is on here. Talking, let me just get back there, what he's saying. He says, people deserve a seat at the table to be part of the conversation about how much money should be spent on our children.
Wait a minute, Mr. Allen. Let me get my mind right. Let me get my mind around this. Now, Chris Stewart was a member for 4 years of the Minneapolis Board of Education. He had every opportunity to do all the great things that he initially had said prior to his election and the controversy surrounding his election. So why didn't he do it when he was on for the 4 years he was on the board?
I don't know.
He wants to do now.
I don't know, but Mr. Edwards, I want you to hold on to your studio seat because I got to read the last sentence in the story.
Okay.
Because we have been split and won't tolerate it, says Reverend Randolph Statton, head of the Coalition of Black Churches.
He said we've been what?
We've been split and we won't tolerate it.
Now, is that an urban term? Is that an inner city term? Does that mean that you got shot through the grease or something like that? I mean, is that like a pig and a poke and et cetera? So they got who slicked them? I mean, the superintendent or the Board of Education or the union?
Superintendent Bernard Johnson says she was frustrated that most of the previous negotiation sessions were focused on issues outside of the contract and that both sides only recently had begun to discuss key issues. You know, Bernadier, all these guys, they're all complicit in this BS because, Mr. Edwards, we have the factual data about the Minneapolis public schools and the kids that are going to Minneapolis public schools and their proficiency rate, and this has been going on a long time. You know, these kids are failing
These people don't, they just want to get in the newspaper, make a name for themselves, get us to tell them the names and go after them on their blogs and on the radio. But other than that, they virtually do nothing. So.
I mean, you're absolutely on point, Mr. Allen, because, I mean, in the case of Mr. Stewart, I mean, he was on the board for 4 years. He had ample opportunity. I repeat, I know it sounds redundant, but I repeat what I said just minutes ago. He had ample opportunity to be the flagship, if you will, and fight the good battle. You know, I mean, I don't understand what's happening. By the way, now, the same argument that will be presented in that article tomorrow morning is the same information that came out 4 or 5 days ago about what has happened in St. Paul, where the where the district got up and walked away from the negotiations and requested under state law a state mediator be brought in, which automatically closes the discussions to the public, you know. And I wonder if that's going to be the move the board's going to make here. And I wonder if these cats really carrying water for big corporate to close, because, you know, the word is out, man, all across the country, that deals are being discussed and struck here in the Twin Cities, particularly Minneapolis, to really turn the Minneapolis public school system into charter schools and little experimental laboratories for big corporate. And, you know, I got to say, hey, guys, you're out there listening. That's a pretty clever move, because if it makes it appear that you've ticked off the board, if you will, and then the board decides to walk away from negotiations and then the law requires that a mediator be brought in, then that automatically closes the negotiations to the public. That is clever. Hey, man, the Black Alliance, man, they got some thinkers in there, I guess. No matter how ill-motivated they may be. You know, that is a clever move. I wonder who is the reporter, Don? Can you tell that is writing that story for tomorrow morning's edition?
Steve Brandt, our buddy.
Steve Brandt. Okay. Yeah, maybe you can ask Steve, is he aware of the cleverness of what that story is projecting? That is a clever piece, man. Yeah, because now the board acts, you know, offended and ticked off, and they decide to walk away from the negotiation table.
Yes.
And you'll never find out what went on inside of there.
No, you never, will never.
I'd be doggone. Well, Don, looks like we're down to the last 2 minutes, buddy. And,
yes, sir.
God, I thought maybe we'd get some conversation, particularly on the Somalis and the fact Minneapolis being identified as a center of domestic terrorism, but I guess nobody wants to touch that, do they?
No, they don't want to touch it at all. They just don't want to touch it. No one mess with it. You know, there was a press conference with KJUN, which is the largest, one of the largest nonprofits, Somali nonprofits in Minnesota, and they showed unity, and there's some videos. They'll be in the newspaper tomorrow, too. I'm just looking at a lot of this stuff from the Star Tribune and starting to post tonight.
Okay. Yeah, wishing. Go ahead.
We'd like to thank everybody for listening, and we'll be back next Wednesday, if not sooner. This is the Ron and Don Show.